Welcome back to The Deep Dive. If you are tracking the economics of music, well, whether you're an artist or maybe just a really curious observer, you know the streaming landscape is kind of defined by this confusing mix. You've got incredible success on one hand and also some profound frustration on the other.
Oh, definitely. We see these platforms paying out billions, literally billions.
Right. Yet, independent creators often still struggle. They're trying to figure out how royalties are even calculated or how new threats, you know, like AI spam and bots are actually affecting their income.
And that confusion is honestly entirely justified. It's complex stuff.
Right.
So to try and cut through some of that opacity, we've actually taken excerpts from a pretty deep discussion with Sam, who's Spotify's policy head for artists.
Ah, okay. So his team is kind of the operational hub.
Pretty much, yeah. They manage everything from artist analytics and promo tools right through to defining the big policies around AI content, artificial streaming, and crucially, the royalty mechanics themselves.
Okay, great. So our mission today is pretty clear then. We're trying to get behind the scenes a bit. We want to unpack, let's say, three major areas based on these sources. First, we really need to demystify that stream share model, you know, how the payment actually works, and maybe debunk that persistent low per stream rate idea.
Yeah, that myth just won't die.
Right. Second, we'll dig into Spotify's strategy. How are they defining and supporting what they call a professional artist when there's like 12 million competitors out there?
A huge number.
And finally, how exactly are they defending that fixed royalty pool, you know, from all the tech threats, the bots, the generative AI stuff?
And it's not just about defense, is it? It's also about shaping what a sustainable creative career even looks like now in the 21st century. The interview really gives us a very detailed look at how they're making those tough choices.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Let's start with maybe the massive shift in the music world itself. Think back to the peak CD era, maybe around, what, 2000?
Yeah, the good old days for some.
Yeah. Huh, maybe. But back then, for an artist just to get their music distributed globally, I mean, you had to get past the gatekeepers, right? Major labels, publishers, big distribution companies.
Absolutely. You were probably one of only a few thousand artists, mostly Western, who even made it through those walls.
So opportunity was super restricted, but I guess the payoff for those few was potentially huge.
That's the key difference, yeah. Today, access is democratized. Pretty much anyone can upload music. That's fantastic for creativity, obviously, but it creates this intense competitive bottleneck.
And the money involved, I mean, it does confirm the industry overall is healthier than ever, financially speaking, even if the money isn't spread the same way. The source confirms Spotify alone is now paying out a frankly staggering $10 billion annually to the music industry.
$10 billion. And that's up from just $1 billion 10 years ago? It's a tenfold increase. It's huge growth.
What's maybe even more remarkable, and I think often overlooked, is where that money's actually flowing.
Mm-hmm. Half of that $10 billion, so about $5 billion a year, is now going directly to indies.
And when we say indies, that means...
That's the whole ecosystem. Independent labels, indie distributors, and crucially, the self-releasing artists, the DIY community. That kind of financial clout just wasn't available to independent operators two decades back.
Okay, but hang on. $5 billion split among, you said, 12 million uploaders. That still sounds like pennies for most people.
Well, yeah, that's the sort of reality check we have to face. 12 million unique individuals have uploaded music to the platform.
So how does policy even deal with that scale?
That's where they have to get granular. The platform basically acknowledges, look, they can't really set policies designed for a hobbyist, you know, someone who might just put up one song for their friends.
Right.
And their data suggests about 8 million of those 12 million uploaders have released fewer than 10 songs in their entire history on the platform. So, yeah. Arguably hobbyists.
Okay, so who is the focus for policy then? Who are they building these tools and systems for?
They focus their main efforts, their initiatives, on the roughly 225,000 recording artists who've shown a more long-term commitment.
And how do they define that commitment?
It generally means artists who've released more than 10 songs and, importantly, consistently maintain over 10,000 monthly listeners.
Okay, so that really reframes the competition, doesn't it? It's not 12 million people scrambling for scraps. It's more like a focused competition between, say, 225,000 artists or groups who are actually trying to build a sustainable career.
Exactly. Being a professional recording artist today requires that intentional, long-term strategy. You need a catalog, you need promotion, you can't just, you know, throw a few songs out there and hope one goes viral on a playlist.
So the focus is shifting away from just those vanity metrics like raw monthly listener counts that can spike and vanish.
That's the idea. They're prioritizing metrics that reward catalog depth and genuine fan engagement. They talk specifically about super listeners and active audience, basically, the fans who are likely to stick around, listen to more than just one hit, and actually help sustain an artist's career long term.
That focus on sustainability, that leads us right into the biggest area of confusion, royalties. And that constant complaint about the per stream rate. We hear it all the time, right? Platform X pays double per stream what Spotify pays.
Right, and what's fascinating, or maybe frustrating depending on your perspective, is that the perception of a low per stream rate is often an artifact of Spotify's success, not really a sign of poor payout overall.
Okay, unpack that.
We really have to stress this point. No major streaming service pays a fixed, guaranteed amount per stream. That's just not how it works.
So that per stream rate number we see everywhere.
It's just a calculated metric. It's a simple division. You take the total money paid out in a period and divide it by the total number of streams that happened in that same period. It's an output, not an input to the payment system.
Okay, so if the payment isn't per stream, how does the money actually flow? What's the real mechanism?
It operates under what's called the stream share model. Basically, the platform gathers up a big pool of money, roughly 2/3 of all their subscription and ad revenue generated from music listening.
Okay, a fixed pool.
A fixed pool for that period, yeah. And then that total pool gets divided up based on an artist's share of the total streams that occurred in that period, say, in a given month. So if your songs accounted for, let's say, 0.1% of all the streams played globally that month, you get 0.1% of that total revenue pool.
Got it. And this leads to what we were calling the engagement paradox earlier.
Exactly. If you succeed in becoming the most engaging platform, meaning people listen a lot, your total pool of money gets bigger because you keep subscribers and attract advertisers. But the number of streams grows even faster, maybe exponentially.
Which makes that calculated per stream rate look lower, even though the total payout is higher.
Precisely. Spotify's whole business model is built around maximizing engagement, keeping users listening for hours and hours. This means their total royalty pool is enormous, that $10 billion figure. But when you divide that huge pool by an even more enormous industry-leading number of total streams, the resulting calculated per stream rate will inevitably look lower than competitors who might have fewer users listening to less music overall.
But let me push back on that slightly. If I'm a small artist and platform A has a calculated rate that's twice as high, doesn't that still feel better for me, even if it's just a calculation? Don't I get more per play?
Only if platform A can actually deliver a comparable total paycheck at the end of the month. The paradox highlights that if Spotify, for instance, tried to artificially boost its calculated per stream rate, the only way to do that would be to somehow get users to listen to less music.
Which would be business suicide.
Right. It would likely lead to user cancellations, fewer ads served, and ultimately shrink the total revenue pool for everyone, including that small artist. The data actually shows that over half of all streaming royalties going to the indie community globally come from Spotify. That's because they prioritize making the total pie as big as possible through engagement.
And the growth figures seem to back that up, not just for the superstars, but further down the chain too. That data point about the 100,000th ranked artist was really striking.
Yeah, it really shows the power of scaling this model. 10 years ago, the artist ranked 100,000th on Spotify globally might have made about $600 a year from the platform.
Which is not much.
Not much at all. But today, that same 100,000th ranked artist is making around $6,000 annually from Spotify. That's a tenfold increase in revenue for someone pretty far outside the mainstream.
Wow. That jump from $600 to $6,000 is actually pretty significant when you think about global career sustainability. $600 doesn't pay for much anywhere, really. But $6,000, especially if you're in a lower cost market outside, say, the US or Western Europe, that could genuinely help pay for better gear, mixing, mastering. It could underpin a longer term artistic effort.
Absolutely. It suggests that maximizing the size of the total paycheck is likely the most effective way to empower that long tail of artists and build a more global music economy.
Okay, so we have this massive growing pie. Now let's talk about protecting it. Protecting it from these newer technological threats. The two big worries we hear from artists are AI music generation, you know, tools that can pump out hundreds of tracks a day, and artificial streaming, basically bots set up to steal money from that fixed pool.
Yeah, these are legitimate concerns. Spotify's policy lead, Sam, was very clear on their stance, though. Their focus is squarely on helping human artists thrive. They see AI primarily as a potential tool for expression, like a new kind of synthesizer or drum machine, not as a replacement for human creativity itself.
Okay, but they must have some hard lines, some rules about AI content.
They do. There are two strict no-fly zones, as they put it, that they're enforcing pretty heavily.
What are they?
First one's simple: impersonation. Using AI to generate music that deliberately impersonates another existing artist without their explicit permission. That's a violation of their deceptive content policy. Full stop. No ambiguity there.
Makes sense. And the second?
The second zone is tackling the scale of potential spam and mass uploads. AI obviously makes it exponentially easier to just flood the platform with tons of, frankly, low-quality or generic tracks. Tracks may be designed just to capture tiny fractions of streams and payouts at massive volume.
So how are they stopping that AI-generated spam from just overwhelming the system and maybe drowning out real artists?
They're investing heavily in pretty sophisticated anti-spam detection technology. You have to remember, every single fraudulent stream, whether from a bot or mass AI spam, takes a little bit of money out of that same fixed pool that's supposed to pay legitimate human artists.
Right, it's a zero-sum game within that pool each month.
Exactly. So their policy here is aggressive because it has to be. It's driven by the need to protect the integrity of that shared resource for everyone else.
And we actually have a really good real-world measure of how effective they might be against bots, right? You mentioned that recent law enforcement case, the big one with the $10 million fraud scheme across multiple streaming services.
Yes, that was a major operation hitting several platforms. But what's really critical for you, the listener, to understand is the breakdown. Of that entire $10 million identified as fraudulent royalties across the board, only about $60,000 was successfully extracted from Spotify.
Wow, only $60,000 out of $10 million.
Yeah, it's a tiny fraction. It strongly suggests that their detection technology is significantly more advanced or effective compared to some competitors who, unfortunately, absorbed much larger shares of that fraudulent activity.
So their detection systems must be catching this stuff much earlier. Are they just blocking the streams or adjusting payments later?
It seems to be mostly proactive detection. Their systems are designed to actively identify and remove those artificial streams before they significantly impact things. They get removed from public metrics, like chart positions, and crucially, they're filtered out before the royalty calculations happen.
So the artist might not even see the fake streams hit their dashboard.
Often, yes. The goal is to catch it so early that the fraud barely registers publicly or in the artist's own analytics. That provides, you know, more peace of mind and cleaner data for those professional artists trying to track their real audience growth.
And it's not just defense against the bad actors, is it? The platform is also investing in sort of offense features that bots and pure AI likely can't replicate. Things focused on genuine fan connection.
Absolutely. If your core belief is that the value lies in human creativity and real fan engagement, then your tools have to reflect that. That's why they're rolling out features like integrated music videos within the app.
Which are live in a lot of places now, right? Just waiting on US-Canada licensing.
Yeah, over 100 markets live already. And things like artist clips. Those short vertical videos artists can link directly to their tracks, and also beta programs like listing parties, which allow artists to have live interactive sessions with their top fans right there on the platform.
That focus on the fan experience actually brings us neatly to another area of confusion, the whole audiobook bundling thing. There was a lot of noise, lawsuits even, suggesting that adding audiobooks was somehow taking money away from musicians.
Yeah, that caused quite a stir. But it seems to stem from a fundamental misunderstanding of how the finances are structured. The source was very clear on this. The music royalty pool is completely 100% separate from the pool used to pay authors and publishers for audiobooks or podcasters for their content.
Okay, so they're like two different buckets of money entirely.
Exactly. Adding non-music content like audiobooks or podcasts is purely a strategy to increase the overall value of the subscription for the user.
The goal being just to keep people subscribed, stop them from canceling.
Precisely. Better retention means more subscribers paying month after month, which ultimately means more total revenue flowing into that music royalty pool. It's meant to grow the pie, not shrink it.
So what was the lawsuit actually about then?
It seems the controversy, particularly the one involving the NMPA, centered on a very specific technical provision regarding mechanical royalties, and only in the U.S. There are different government-mandated rates for mechanicals depending on whether a service is standalone music or part of a bundle. It's a complex regulatory rule that all streaming services operating bundles have to navigate.
Ah, so a U.S.-specific regulatory issue, not Spotify taking money from the global music pool for audiobooks.
Correct. And interestingly, the policy head mentioned They're actively trying to move away from relying solely on those sometimes inflexible government-mandated rates anyway.
How are they doing that?
By striking more direct licensing deals with the major publishers themselves, like they've recently done with Universal Music Publishing Group and Warner Chappell. These direct deals potentially allow for more flexibility and responsiveness, negotiating terms that better suit the business needs of songwriters and publishers, rather than just sticking to the baseline government rates.
Okay, that makes sense. So let's loop back to those fan engagement tools, because this seems key to their strategy moving forward. Music videos in 100-plus markets, artist clips globally, the listing party beta. These aren't just generic social media feeds tacked on, are they?
No, not at all. They're designed to be deeply integrated with the music listening experience. They're optimized based on music taste, and the goal is explicitly to drive continued listening, specifically deeper engagement with an artist's catalog.
So reinforcing the idea that Spotify is the place for dedicated fans to really explore an artist's work, not just a place to chase that one fleeting viral hit.
Exactly. These are tools meant for the professional artist, the one building that long-term career we talked about, the $6,000 a year artist, just as much as, if not more than, the global superstar. These tools help nurture that artist-fan relationship, which is ultimately what sustains careers.
Okay, so let's try and bring this full circle for everyone listening. This deep dive, based on the Source interview, it really paints a picture of a global music industry that, financially at least, has surpassed its old CD era peak.
Yeah, the total revenue is bigger now.
Independence seems to be increasingly powerful financially, with half the streaming payout going to indies. And the fight against these high-tech threats, the bots and AI spam, it appears to be very active and, based on the data shared, quite effective, certainly more so than maybe commonly perceived.
And the underlying strategy seems clear. Focus on maximizing the total size of that royalty pie through user engagement and retention, and build tools specifically for artists aiming for long-term career viability, not just quick hits.
So if we connect this back to the bigger picture for you listening, the data really does strongly suggest that maybe obsessing over that easily calculated per stream rate is, well, perhaps a distraction for the serious artist.
Right. The real goal from this perspective seems to be maximizing the total paycheck you receive at the end of the month. And that comes from being on platforms with the largest, most engaged user bases who subscribe consistently.
Which brings us to our final thought for you to maybe mull over. Given that this simple per stream rate calculation is fundamentally pretty misleading, and that platforms like Spotify are now clearly prioritizing these deeper engagement metrics like super listeners and active audience, what's next? What new, maybe universal, and importantly transparent metrics should artists, managers, labels, distributors, what should you start prioritizing and maybe even demanding from streaming services? How can we truly quantify an artist's genuine long-term value and fan engagement in this new era?
Finding that new language, that new standard of measurement, that might just be the key to how creators really secure their future in the streaming age. Something to think about.
Definitely something to think about. Thanks for diving in with us today. I'll catch you next time.